The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, our front nine starts with a melodramatic Monday at the Cognizant, the return of Anthony Kim, plus golf announcements in both of our lives. Big changes up ahead to our golf games coming soon to the podcast as well. And this week's guest, it's another great twofer. First up, it's Maury Hirsch-Gordon from WHGH Sports in Boston, Massachusetts, a fellow Quinnipiac grad joining the show. Plus, our LPGA focus guest this week is rookie Malia Nam from Hawaii. We've also got takes on Caitlin Clark and LeBron James. And when we end with food, it's a new White Claw drink and an amazing dessert pastry. All that brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. And I hinted at it last week, Mike, but the Swing Aid Tumbler comes in handy when you're having a week-long beach vacation like I was on the beaches of Southwest Florida. Keeps the beverage nice and cool, so it not only works as a great beverage aid that fits in any golf cart for your golf experience, but you can take it on vacation with you, you can take it on the go, and it's just a small bit of the wonderful product line that our friends at Desert Fox Golf have. Again, check out DesertFoxGolf.com for everything they have available, from the Swing Aid Tumbler to the Phone Caddy and beyond. New releases coming soon as well. Again, check them out at DesertFoxGolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, let's tee off with the rebranded Cognizant Classic at in the Palm Beaches, also just known as the one at PGA National.
The Honda, basically, as we knew it for decades. It's got a name change,
It's they had some weather over the weekend in Florida, which meant they got a Monday morning finish that absolutely nobody watched because it's a Monday morning finish.
Yeah.
And Austin Ekroth takes the W. He like just had the lead, if I remember correctly, at the end of the day on Sunday before they all finished up, and he just held on and took it over a three-stroke lead over Erik van Rooyen, who had a really strong 63 and posted the number in the clubhouse on Saturday getting his round. Then Erik just got to sit back and watch himself lose. So
yeah, these Monday AM finishes are just such a letdown because there's so much momentum on the golf calendar each and every week built towards that Sunday afternoon crescendo on network television, which we all love to see as fans of the tour and fans of the game. So when you get that message early Sunday afternoon, weather hitting hard through Florida, not looking good, move things to Monday morning, it really lets a lot of the air out. There's just no way around mentioning it. So it was a little bit of a quiet finish with Ekroth coasting to the W, but regardless, Cognizant in the books. Interesting to see that the PGA National course probably didn't play as tough as it had in recent years. I know there's some little ballyhooing and complaining about that in recent seasons. The bear trap was still there to a certain extent, but overall, good win for Ekroth.
I am curious now, so what this Monday finish means for the rest of the season, because we've now had two events on the PGA Tour that have been affected by weather this season. And of course, one event on the senior circuit that was affected by weather.
Yep, in Naples, yep.
What kind of horrible omen does this have for the PGA Tour season and weather?
Yeah, I mean, the one I always think of is weather delays at TPC Sawgrass, too. Mm. I feel like we're always good for like one of those. And I hate to knock on wood, but we're coming up on Players Championship season. Yeah. We're in that Florida swing. I just happened to catch an absolutely perfect weather, a rain-free beach time in Southwest Florida. I was there right after the bad stuff, and I left right before it. So it looks like it's a bit of a wet pattern in Florida, and that's that's the Florida kind of south swing that we're on right now. So we got to duck the rain and the thunderstorms for the next few weeks.
The LPGA is still out there in Asia. They had the HSBC Women's World Championship, and it was a walk-off victory on the 18th hole.
That was awesome. Yeah, probably the golf highlight of the weekend that I'm going to is Hannah Green with the walk-off, not only on 18, but finishing with three birdies, Mike, to get it done. That's like the turkey in bowling, if you will, finishing with three in a row, strike to get it done. Her playing partner, Andrea Lee, with the photo of the week, had her fist up in the air as the putt was about a foot from the hole. She knew it was good. So very impressive win for Hannah, who I believe has got up close to a handful, I think four or five victories as a professional. So she's definitely made her name as a regular on the tour. But that was definitely her biggest highlight win and an awesome way to go out on 18 with the walk-off.
Yes, it was the fourth win for the Aussie on that 27-foot winning putt. So that's how you do it.
I mean, listen, I don't know. Like when you dream about it, you know, as a kid, I don't think you really dream of hitting the like approach shot, like a foot away and tapping in or like, you know what I mean? There's always some sort of putt of consequence on the 72nd hole, if you will. So for her to do it in that spot style, just kind of living out all of our childhood dreams.
LIV Golf Jeddah was this past weekend, only worth talking about for two reasons. One, of course, is the return of Anthony Kim.
Yeah, 76-76-74, Mike. 16 over for three rounds. What are your thoughts on the surface level of those scores?
My thoughts is that he was 11 shots clear of Hudson Swafford for last place. Last place. There was one more who finished worse, Wade Ormsby, but he only played in the third round.
Like as an alternate or something like that. Yeah, that didn't count.
He went in for Matthew Wolf, who only played the first two rounds. So I guess they can do a swap here on this. So Anthony Kim, not a good return to the game of golf when everyone thought he was in chip shape. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It was a little bit of a letdown. DFL, as they say on the internet, for his finish on the leaderboard in his debut. And there were some moments when he had a bit of the AK swagger there. But again, like people are forgetting it's been over a decade since this guy teed it up into anything meaningful. Like I know there may be a moment when he could get back to a week of that type of golf he was playing 10, 12 years ago. But it's very hard to do that on a professional scale, especially, you know, when the spotlight is on his game for real and you have to hole out every single putt. So it'll be interesting to see what the rest of his season looks like. They're basically just giving him a free reign, just a free pass and a hall pass for the entire season out there, just because it will do whatever they can to get eyeballs and they're fascinated with his return. So I'm curious to see if he's able to improve on his dead last finish from this debut, which I certainly hope he is at least.
Joaquin Niemann took another win this year on LIV Golf, this time winning by four strokes clear of Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel. And of course, the big headline is that Joaquin Niemann is going to Augusta.
He is. He is getting major invites. The majors that were previously pretty aligned on where they were going to stand for certain policy holders and who actually qualified and got exemptions in their fields. Definitely moving a bit towards LIV Golf and that Joaquin Niemann is getting an exemption as a LIV player to the Masters. And I'm also hearing, based on what he said anecdotally, that he's going to get a similar exemption to the PGA Championship at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky in May. So it's an interesting moment because it looks like the majors are kind of carving that middle ground to where they're not quite opening the doors or floodgates completely exemption wise for LIV golfers, but they are picking and choosing guys who are very hot and playing very well and giving them that pass for the moment.
Yeah, it's just, you know, especially with John Rahm now being on LIV Golf, the balance of talent has evened considerably, I think, between the two tours. I still am not going to watch LIV Golf because it's three rounds. It's on CW. I'm not going to watch anything on that'll get cable. So I'm not going to watch it. And I just have a visceral reaction to LIV Golf still being who I am. But, you know, there certainly is something that needs to be done, whether or not there is a merger here with PIF and the PGA Tour, to get these guys who are still playing well and are big names to be playing in the majors, even as they lose world ranking status. I don't know what that is here. Obviously, nobody does, but
I don't
something,
either.
Something needs to happen.
I'm just at the fed up point where I'm just like, all right, fine. PIF and Saudi entities that be like you won the money battle and you'll continue to win the money battle. Just give me my awesome tour back where all the best players were playing under one roof for the same trophies.
The problem is how bad this is for the game of golf as a whole. This doesn't really grow the game. This fragments the game, like we've said and everyone else has said. And now it's like, I don't know what to pay attention to anymore. So,
yeah, anyways, we'll see more and more Joaquin Neiman. At least he is breaking through with his play on LIV Golf. So I guess there's a little bit more recognition from the majors coming up.
I do want to talk, Alex, about this weekend because I finally took my holiday money that I asked for from family. Instead of gifts, I wanted cold, hard cash.
You saved up wisely.
Because I needed new golf clubs because I have been playing 25, 30 year old Tommy Armors.
when you finally say it and you put the actual age on it, it's one of those things where in my mind, I wanted to think they were 15 to 20 years old, but I deep down knew truly how old they were. And I'm glad that you're finally putting those to bed. Thank you.
It was like, wait, when did I get these? I got these when I was in high school. So yeah, when I was like 16, 17, oh crap, that was 20 years ago and I bought them used.
Yep. I'm coming up on 10 to 15 years of my golf club, so I'm starting to feel those vibes. But nonetheless, congrats. You took the leap in honor of Leap Day last week. You made the plunge. You got new clubs in the bag. So what did you get, and how are you styling out there now?
Well, went to the PGA Tour Superstore because you have to get fit. So made sure to hit a couple different sets so we could see results and everything. Tried the Callaway Maverick, the Callaway Rogue. And then a cheaper set that some people may scoff at the moment, the Adams Idea Irons.
Okay. All right.
Adams, who was a brand and then got bought up by TaylorMade and went away. And now they're back as kind of a really focusing on improvement and entry level. And as we know, as you know, Alex, I'm not a great golfer because I don't play. So I'm shooting in the hundreds, low hundreds for 18 holes. And I think the thing that really shocked me the most is that I hit my 7-iron right now like 140, maybe 145.
Okay. Yeah. Well, were you seeing difference with the newbies?
I was hitting these new 7-irons like 170, 175.
What the hell? Jeez. Wow. All right. Yeah. I would be taking my credit card out too. I get it.
And for like $200 less than the Callaway, the Adams clubs were going just about the same, maybe a couple yards different.
Hard to argue with.
And really good launch angle. They were going like an 8-degree difference in launch angle. It's a huge, huge difference there. And of course, on a 7-iron, especially, I want to hit it high and soft. I used to be able to hit everything high and soft, and then I just stopped playing regularly. So to get a club that'll let me do that and is less money, it's just kind of made sense. So I went the set of the Adams Idea Irons and had some extra money. So I bought myself a nice little OGO bag to replace my not as nice Titleist one. Bags are expensive, by the way. I don't know if you've looked at how pricey bags are these days. They are cheap.
Yeah.
So I got a nice new setup to go with for the year. So now, my wife says I need to play at least 10 times this year. So
I like that. That's a great initiative. A very wise purchase and very well thought out with the fitting process as well too.
And of course the annoying thing was then, on Sunday, I wanted to go hit the whole set and make sure that I, you know, wasn't going to be totally pissed off at what I had done and notice that I'm playing the exact same way that
I was
before.
Of course, the christening, of course, everyone loves it.
So it's been raining here in the Savannah area, but I still was like, well, you know, it's dry today. So let's go to a range. So I went to one range. Range was closed. Course was open. Range was closed. Went to another course. That course was open. Range was closed.
Oh, no.
So I just kind of threw my hands up and went, I'm not driving to another range, or I'm not spending another 20 minutes in my car to go to another range. I'm done. So I came home.
And you're still sitting waiting on that christening session? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Because today, Alex, we had to record this. I couldn't go to the range after work. I had to come home so we could record. So really, you're the problem, Alex. You're the reason I'm not christening
these
clubs.
Pass the blame to me. I love it. I'm used to it. It's okay. My life update is that you saw me in Florida this past week when I recorded the last episode. Another Florida vacation in the books. But this thing I didn't, which I hadn't done before in the Naples golf area, the Links in Naples, Mike, I played night golf, 18 holes at an executive course, a little par 61, all par threes and par fours. And it was great playing 18 holes of golf in about 2 hours and 45 minutes. How about that for pace play?
So kind of like what they did with the match under the lights in Florida, right?
Basically, yeah. It was it's a nice little, you know, very easy to get around track, short, moderate par threes. All the par fours were probably 350 or less, most of them about 250, 300 yards. Very nice. Playable. I didn't hit it very well, but it's a fun experience. I got to say, depth perception, Mike, very hard at night. Yeah, with a range finder, just really committing to numbers and finding the flagsticks when it's late at night. Not easy. Definitely another handicap out there.
Yeah, it's I could have told you that even before. Night vision, it's why I don't want to do like night skiing either, because it was just I don't trust anything if I'm doing that at night. If I'm driving a car, I'm great. But if I'm playing golf or if I'm skiing, I don't want to do it at night.
Definitely. But a fun experience nonetheless. We're going to have a full length video coming on YouTube soon to that. But be sure to follow along at COL Podcast and Course of Life Alex on Instagram for more from Night Golf. Highlight of the round actually ended up coming not from my golf game, but from my wife, who was along for the ride. So
does she even play?
Exactly. Stay tuned to the video. So that was the update from last week. And the Life in Golf announcement here in Austin, Texas, Mike, I currently have a part-time job at a golf course.
Nice.
So I have access to free golf. That's right. The best golf in the world. So I'm looking forward to using the club that I'm at and working there. I'm working events at the club here in Austin. So hopefully this is a calling card for my game in 2024. I've got no excuses because I got a place to hit balls whenever the freak I want for $0.00. So this could be a sign of good things to come for both you and I on the golf front.
I'm looking forward to seeing you whip my butt every time we play.
Absolutely.
Once a year.
Yes, sir.
As you said, we're going to have a video going up on our YouTube channel sometime soon of that session under the lights that you just had in Florida. Do have a video that just hit there as well of you doing a 16 for 16 challenge at TPC Scottsdale on a simulator. We should preface that you weren't actually at TPC Scottsdale during
the
Waste
Management.
But it
felt like it with the fans, Mike. I mean, did you hear the boo birds on that video? They are relentless.
They were out in force and they were not happy with the vast majority of your shots. And of course, we got a lot more coming from the PGA show as well. So make sure you check out there for everything we got going on there. Some cool stuff hitting on there all the time. This weekend, the PGA Tour sticks around in Florida as part of that Florida swing. It is the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
Yes, sir.
At Bay Hill. Of course, it is a loaded field. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa. They're all out there because, it's the Arnold Palmer Invitational. This is a signature event, isn't it? It's considered a signature event, I think.
Yes, sir. We're backing up into the Players' Championship as well, too. So we're all kind of huddled in Florida right now. Sunshine State Golf on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, obviously teeing it up at the spot of the legend, the home of Arnie. We had a great interview a couple weeks ago with Rick Smith that aired as well, too. Be sure to listen to that Arnold Palmer story he told. My time with Arnie goes back to me being a 10-year-old sign boy at a Champions Tour event where I walked 18 holes with him. So I always love this event and remind you those moments I shared with Mr. Palmer, just an absolute legend in the game. His spot at the end of the range, Mike, which you love, still there, honorary umbrella and chair where he would have loved to hit at the end of the Bay Hill range. So love paying tribute to Arnie this week, and hopefully we get a deserving champion on what's usually a pretty tricky course in Bay Hill.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed. Let's do a little tuned in real quick before we get to the turn, because I have to talk about the big movie that came out this weekend that I got to see, and that is Dune 2.
Oh, wow. You did see it.
I saw it on the tallest IMAX screen in the world, which is surprisingly just outside of Savannah in Pooler, Georgia, of all the places.
Shocking. I think you gave me that fact when we were driving around, but I didn't quite pick up where it was geographically. So that's right near you. It's in your hood then. Nice.
Yeah. And I can go ahead and say that Dune 2 was fantastic. If you thought the first Dune was slow and too political and you were wondering when the action would start, it starts in Dune 2. It's an incredible 2.5 hour piece of filmmaking. From every single aspect of it. It really was spectacularly well done. And at least the theater that I was in here in Pooler had so much bass And of course, the screen being so large, the seats shook, and I felt immersed in the film like I was right there when the sandworms were flying through the sand.
Oh, I love that. The truest form of IMAX reality in the cinema.
Yes. So very well done. Highly recommended. Dune 2 out in theaters right now.
Good review. There it is. Dune 2. Love it.
All right, let's get to this week's first guest, which I think actually might be you, Alex. I think this might be your twin. He's a Quinnipiac graduate,
yep,
like you, with a broadcast journalism degree.
Which I have.
Like you. At least on this podcast, you like to sometimes talk about Boston sports.
Yep.
And you talk to Boston sports personalities as well.
Correct.
And this person is in Marco Island.
It's unbelievable. The comparisons were eerie when I first connected with and befriended Maury Hirsch-Gordon with WHDH. Seeing that he was a fellow Quinnipiac grad was awesome. So we recounted his experience there. Obviously, relived the national championship moment, which Quinnipiac Bobcats fans all love from the hockey season in 2023. And yeah, the comparisons just went from there. And he was down in Marco in Southwest Florida covering spring training for the Red Sox, Mike. Always a nice little local Boston sports assignment when you get to spend a couple weeks in Southwest Florida. So he had a great time there, and we have an awesome conversation coming your way with Maury Hirsch-Gordon. Next up, he's the lead sports anchor at WHDH 7 News in Boston, and he's a fellow Quinnipiac University Bobcat, so we had to have him on the Course of Life. It's Maury Hirsch-Gordon joining us. Maury, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks so much for having me on, and always a pleasure to chat with a Bobcat, especially as we are still, at this point, reigning national champions.
Yes, very well put indeed. Yeah, I've been seeing you for months on my WHDH app, where I check in on the Boston sports scene and get your sports reports, and it was funny to find out that we graduated from the same school. So I got to ask that we finally got that national championship in hockey. Did you remember that night? Where were you watching? What was special about that national championship to you as it was to every other Bobcat fan?
Yeah, no doubt. So I actually had the privilege of covering one that we lost in 2016. That was my junior year. So it was nice to, you know, have kind of been on that side of things and seen the heartbreak and then being able to kind of feel the elation, you know, and the weight off our shoulders, because Rand Pecknold's been there for so long, and they'd been to 3 Frozen Fours. But, you know, as far as that night, I was with my fiance at the time, who's now my wife. You know, we both met at Quinnipiac, and we were at her house in Connecticut, not too far from Hamden. And luckily, we were just there watching, and we didn't like go upstairs to like go to the bathroom because they scored 10 seconds into overtime. You know, luckily we had kind of hung with the broadcast there, or else we would have missed it. But just what a night. You know, still waiting to get some of my gear here. I'm kind of holding out hope that they might win it again this year with them being another top 5 team, but for sure got to get some swag, and just an unbelievable moment for the school and the university. Think about everything that's happened with Quinnipiac the last 25 years, going from, you know, Division 2 to Division 1, and then from a small major to a mid-major, and now we're this power in hockey.
Yeah, definitely. When I was there in 2005 to 2009, they were kind of more so known for the polls that you see on CNN. But now we're officially a hockey school, which is a much better title in my eyes. So love to see the Bobcats still as national champions here with Maury Hirsch-Gordon, fellow Bobcat. So I'm curious about your time there at school. I did a little bit of everything and dabbled. I got the same degree as you, broadcast journalism. I think you put it to much better use than I did. But tell me about your mix of what you learned at Quinnipiac from a broadcasting perspective.
Yeah, so when I was first looking at schools, and the reason why I eventually went with Quinnipiac was because, you know, you're a player from day one. So you're on the QBSN is the Quinnipiac Bobcat Sports Network. Q30 Television is completely student-run television station with about 100, maybe even, you know, more than 100 members. And I just found that so appealing. And I knew that in order to supplement my schoolwork and what I would learn in lecture halls and in classes, I needed to be able to get reps, right?
It's definitely
no different than if you want to be the shortstop of the Boston Red Sox, you want to take 500 ground balls a day from the time you're really young so that you're 3,500 ground balls better at the end of a week and you continue to pile up reps. No different than in what I do in broadcasting. We cover sports, but it's the same mentality. If I can have 25 or 50 broadcasts and shows under my belt after freshman year, that'll only make me more ready by the time sophomore year comes and junior year. And then I can start to focus on other things and, you know, it can, you know, it eventually help me lead and land a couple of internships. So, you know, Quinnipiac was great. You know, what I learned in the classroom was awesome. And my professors, when you get to the 300 and 400 level classes were great. You know, professors that were in the business and still are in the business and have a lot of experience. But my big takeaway from Quinnipiac and why I chose there and what I think, you know, was the best aspect of the journalism program was the resources that they have for us to go out and do our own style shows. I mean, we have like a First Take style show on Tuesday nights. We had a Sports Center style highlight type show on Mondays. And then we had podcasts and we had beat reporter teams and we traveled on the road and we stayed during spring break to cover, you know, the March Madness runs for the conference tournament and basketball and hockey. So, you know, Quinnipiac really, I think, is a hidden jewel. And, you know, since you were there in the early 2000s and I came, you know, I started in 13, so another class after you. You know, I think in the last 10 to 15 years, Quinnipiac has really started to punch above its weight. And now you see that out in the field right now, whether it's behind the scenes or in front of the camera, there's a lot of Quinnipiac alums doing great things coming out of the journalism department.
Yeah, that sports TV schedule is wild too. Q30 and QBSN on the big come up since I was there as a student. It sounds like the programming ramped up. And like you said, you got a lot of really awesome reps, you know, before you even got out into the field and graduated. I am curious about your origin story because I was reading a little bit about it. My first broadcast was doing the good old high school radio games on Friday nights at Conker Carla High School. But for you, yours was much younger. With your grandfather over the phone, I want you to tell our audience that story about your true first play-by-play calls.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, it dates back to the time I was a youngster, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. You know, you really start to get a grasp of sports and you take a liking to your teams. And, you know, I grew up in the suburbs outside of Philadelphia. So for me, it was, you know, Phillies, Flyers, Eagles, Sixers. And my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, who actually passed away a few years ago, was my best friend, the older brother I never had. I only have one sibling and it's a younger sister. So I'd go over to his house all the time with my grandmother, lived close by, and he was blind. So he passed right before his 90th birthday. And right around the time he was 39, 40, he was diagnosed with a rare genetic disease called Refsum syndrome, which slowly took his eyesight, you know, his peripheral vision, then his far sight, then eventually, you know, he was, you know, called legally blind, but he had almost 40 years of living and sports watching with his vision. So in order for him to watch games growing up, you know, he'd do it on the television, and then that quickly changed to being on the radio, right? Just like a sighted person listens to games in the car.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're listening to a sports game, you have your vision, but you have to listen to it on the radio. So I would go over to his house and I would tell him to turn off his radio and I would pull up the game on the TV. And he didn't like watching games on TV by himself because a lot of the times the play-by-play guy and color guy know that the audience is watching.
Yeah, it's a little more vague on TV versus radio, definitely, yeah.
Exactly. The broadcasters aren't giving you every single play because they know that they're most of, if not all, their audience is sighted. So, you know, from the time I was super young, I'd go over, you know, if it was like summer break, I'm out of school, and I would go over on like a Saturday night, for example. My first love was baseball and same with my grandfather, and I would mute the television and I would give him my own play-by-play reports. And this is as like the Phillies dynasty was being born. Like you had Ryan Howard as a rookie of the year, you had Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley. They won a World Series in 2008 I was in middle school and up until high school, you know, Cole Hamels and Cliff Lee and Roy Holiday. I mean, we had some great teams. So that was really kind of when it started. And then it transcended from going and being with him to then when I was in high school and got a little bit busier, I'd still see him all the time. But if I was watching a Sixers game at home or an Eagles game, I knew he'd be watching. So I'd call him up. And I would go upstairs in my parents' room while my parents were downstairs in the living room watching the game. And I would tell him to turn off his radio and I'd give him the play-by-play over the phone. And then this happened when I was in Quinnipiac, 500 miles away. Then my first job in television was in Wisconsin. So I gave him the last like 6 minutes of the Eagles Super Bowl for the 2017 Super Bowl against the Pats over the phone. And we're 1,200 miles away, but it still feels like I was sitting right there next to him on the couch. So Yeah, I mean, it started even a long time before Quinnipiac, a long time before high school. You know, this has been something that I've been chasing for a long time. And, you know, I always say, you know, every time, you know, I'm on the TV, I always know that there's potentially new audience tuning in or a new viewer. But I know that my grandfather, may he rest in peace, will always be my very first audience.
Yeah, that's an amazing story to tell, too, of that bond. And I'm getting a little bit of a tear in my eye, picturing you maybe calling a Super Bowl winning moment or the final pitch of a World Series and that celebration and rejoice. Those must have been some special moments for the two of you.
It no doubt was. And, you know, the goal and the dream was like play by play from the start. Then I got into college and still did some of that and then have kind of transitioned to the TV side of things, anchoring, reporting and hosting. But play by play for my grandfather was kind of where it all began.
Very cool. Yeah. In terms of your career in broadcasting, you've had a couple stops along the way, most notably at WPRI in Providence. But then most recently, why we got you on is I found you on WHDH in Boston. That's kind of an old school Boston Bruins reference for the New England sports fans. You got the call up from Providence to Boston. Tell me a little bit about what that moment was like. Obviously, kind of, you know, seeing the Boston market from a periphery in Rhode Island and then kind of getting called up to a bigger market like you did. What was that feeling like for you?
Yeah, that's great because, you know, we covered the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Providence Bruins. And then anytime, you know, you'd have a player that was too good for that level, they'd be up in Boston.
It's a good sign.
Put them on the highlights on a nightly basis. So that's a great point you make. Yeah, so I was in Providence for 5.5 years. Loved it. I had started my TV career in Wisconsin. I was about an hour west of Green Bay for about a year. And then had a chance to come back to New England where obviously I met my wife and went to college. So Providence was tremendous. We were 25, 30 minutes to Gillette Stadium. We had a pre and post game show for the Patriots. And like you mentioned, you're kind of right on the outskirts of Boston. Like you're part of the market, but you're not at Bruins and Celtics games on a daily basis.
Right.
You know, we were up at TD Garden. We're up at Fenway Park for the playoff runs. And you're there for the morning skates and the morning shootarounds, but you're not embedded in it on a day-to-day basis. And fortunately, this past summer of 2023, longtime legend Joe Amorsino, who actually went from WPRI to WHDH.
Oh, okay.
I believe it was the late 90s, early 2000s. He got the call up as well then and made a 25-year career for himself at Channel 7. Joe decided to step out of the TV business and focus on some other personal endeavors. And that opened the door for an opportunity to interview and audition. And my pitch to them was this. It was like, hey, you know, that's exactly right. You're coming up from, you know, the AAA ranks, the AHL or ranks. And it's like, hey, I'm ready for this moment. I had an opportunity to lead a department in Providence for 2 years and covered a lot of big time stories, whether it was Providence winning the men's basketball Big East regular season championship for the first time. They made a run of the Sweet 16. I had an opportunity to cover, you know, the Bruins in 2019. The Red Sox winning the World Series in 18. I was there for Brady's last Super Bowl. So I pitched to Boston. I was like, hey, I'm right there. You know, the job is pretty much going to be the same. I know all the PR staffs. I know all the guys. I've been around for half a decade now. You know, now I'm looking for my opportunity and my shot. And, you know, fortunately, things broke my way. And I work in an incredible department right now alongside of Trey Dare and Chelsea McDonald and our new addition to Marley Weirda. And we've got tremendous producers in Coon Lamb and Alex Dembo and Josh Caridio. And, you know, I don't want to forget about my photographers either and editors and Greg Glass and Nick Sapienza.
Love
it's
that.
A great team. And, you know, every day we put our best foot forward in order to, you know, cover the best and the brightest, you know, around Boston. And now being in a city where there's only 13 in the country that have four pro teams, is pretty special and something that I don't take for granted on a daily basis. And I'm driving up to work right now. I'm still living in Rhode Island, looking for a place to move up in Mass, but I make this drive every day and it really gives me an opportunity every day to just kind of reflect and appreciate where I am now. And as much as, you know, I do have goals, and other things that I want to accomplish in my career, it's always great to take a moment to just look where your 10 toes are right now and appreciate where you are.
Yeah, I appreciate that pause. And I also appreciate that we've had a lot of media professionals on here. Not too many of them shout out who's behind the scenes making that broadcast happen. So I appreciate you mentioning that, Maury. And you mentioned the passion and the sports, pro sports ubiquitous. in Boston. I'm now in Austin, Texas, where it's a college town. So I miss a little bit of that energy, which is why I tune every night to your sportscasts. And I want you to kind of compare the scene of Boston sports fans versus where you came from in the Philadelphia area. Also quite a rowdy, rambunctious bunch, to put it lightly. But tell me a little bit of a comparison, if you will, between the Boston sports scene and the Philly sports scene where you grew up.
I think that's what made me so attracted to the job. You know, once I got to Providence and I really tasted, I had an opportunity, like I said in your last question, I've covered a championship run for all four teams in Boston. Celtics and Bruins having lost in 22 and 19, and Red Sox and Patriots having won in 18. Being able to understand that feeling and that emotion and that grittiness and that toughness that the city backs their teams with on a nightly basis reminded me of home. So it really felt like, you know, I was back home. Yes, is Boston a key rival and one of the biggest rivals in, you know, to Philadelphia in terms of all sports? No doubt. However, it made me feel at home because there is that same energy and there is that same like nightly passion of, hey, like my mood is going to be dependent on if the Bruins can win and
absolutely
if the Bruins can make a run. And it goes for all the four big teams and the Revolution even a little bit as well. So, you know, I think, you know, as I've carved out my career here, it's felt a lot like home. The biggest difference is it's a lot more banners hanging in the rafters up in New England, whether it be Foxborough or Boston. Versus Southville, very similar. The biggest difference is my wife, who grew up around here, I think has seen like something like a dozen or more championships across four teams. Where, you know, I still hold on to two, which are the Phillies and the Eagles. I'm still waiting on a Flyers, and I don't know if we'll ever get a Sixers. I think that organization's cursed, but we're still waiting on a couple of those.
Yeah, we're pretty spoiled up in New England as New England sports fans. I tell everyone now that the Patriots have kind of ruined the NFL for me because my only standard is winning the Super Bowl and nothing else counts. So it's a little bit of a different experience now, but I'm glad to have had that amazing run. Again, it's Maury Hirsch Gordon joining us, lead anchor at WHDH 7 News here. Let's get into some random quick shot questions here. Check him out on Instagram. I saw you did a lovely honeymoon, Positano, the Amalfi Coast, very trendy trip I'm seeing a lot of people take. Tell me maybe about the best day from that honeymoon trip. What was the best day you had there?
Yeah, it was great. So it was my first time in Europe. So we did a few days in Positano to start. I think the best thing there was just like the people and the food. You know, the food was really unmatched in Positano and, you know, Italy. It's you walk so much. It's such a walking city. And obviously Italians are known for their pasta and their breads and their carbs, but it never feels like you're like stuffed because you're walking so much. Tremendous weather. We were there in the month of August, spent a couple days there. And then we actually jumped for a long weekend to Paris. And then we jumped for a couple of days to Porto, Portugal. We wanted to kind of hit a few spots while we were out there as
nice
opposed
work.
To just one for a little bit. So we did a few days in each spot. I said, you know what, if I'm going to Europe and it's before we have kids, I'm going to make sure we do a little trip here. So it was tremendous. You know, everything was great. It was like the beautiful, warm beaches of Italy. Then we went to Paris and it was kind of your city vibe. And they, you know, they're turning the city into a city that's going to host the Olympics this upcoming summer. We were able to catch a soccer game, PSG. We got to see Mbappe score, which was very cool and experience what that was like. And then Porto, Portugal, if anybody has an opportunity to get there, extremely affordable, great people. And then just a lot of history there, whether it's the port wine in Douro Valley or, you know, there's a lot of other great things in the city. It's a small city. But they care a lot about their people. So, all three were great. So that's kind of a long-winded answer there, but no, I appreciate you asking. And my wife, Sierra, and I had a blast.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing photos. And then again, check out Maury on Instagram as well for his travels. And I saw one other travel that we got to highlight. You're a golfer, just like a lot of us here are on the course of life. You did the bachelor party in Scottsdale, which I feel like is a rite of passage for guys our age that got someone in our circle that's getting married. I did two of those. I'm curious what the golf and party agenda was for your Scottsdale bachelor party.
So that was for one of my best friends, Steven. That was last April. We went with him and we played, I'm forgetting now on the spot of the course we played in.
I saw you got to the stadium course, which is always a good one.
We got to the stadium course at where the Waste Management Open is held every year. And it was a gorgeous course. It's a pretty penny to play. But it was worth it for sure. You make a full day out of it. You get there early, take advantage of the driving range, and then, you know, of the full 18 holes, and, you know, make sure even if you lose a couple of balls, you know, take those mulligan shots because you want to savor every opportunity you have on that course. But that was tremendous. That was really cool. And we did Toronto for my bachelor party. I wanted to check out a Toronto Blue Jays game, and we played TPC, the only TPC course, I guess, in the country was in Osprey Valley.
Okay, very cool. Interesting.
Right outside of Toronto. So I'm catching the golf bug. I was big baseball, basketball growing up, but once COVID happened and the gyms closed and I couldn't play pickup, you know, I needed to do something with a ball here. My brother-in-laws are big into golfing, and I said, all right, you know what? I'll pick up some sticks. We'll play a little bit. It was one of the few things you could do outdoors. And ever since, you know, I've gotten the bug, gotten a couple lessons here, and I'll hit up Topgolf every once in a while. So it's a great sport, and, you know, just love to compete and love to get out there with my friends and have a good time.
Yeah, I consider myself a little bit of a Topgolf aficionado. I think I've tried about 15 or 20 across the country, and I just got to the new one in Canton, which was very nice for Christmas. And then also, you got to look forward to, for WHDH, we got the LPGA Tour coming to TPC Boston this upcoming August, which is an exciting new event. So I'm looking forward to being there for that one as well.
It's great. We had an event in Rhode Island when I was there called the CBS.
That's right. Yeah. I used to go to that a lot. Faxon and Andre there. Yeah.
It was such a great event. Rory McIlroy was there. You know, who else? There's a few. Keegan Bradley's won it a couple times in a row. I mean, they got some pretty big names. And for those listening who aren't familiar with it, just really quickly, there were six groups and there were three players on each team. And it was somebody from the PGA Tour, from the LPGA, and then a player on the Senior Tour. And it was great. Like, the women on the LPGA Tour deserve a lot more credit than they get, a lot more exposure. And I think that's happening as we see the last 5-10 years with women's sports in general just blowing up, be it the WNBA, be it the PWHL, even women's college basketball.
Definitely.
So, you know, the LPGA Tour should get a lot of buzz in Boston, and it's one of the many things coming up in a few years, including the World Cup that's coming to Foxborough, that should be great for Boston fans and even sports fans in general that want to go see top-level athletes, men and women, and want to come up to New England during the summer months.
Yeah, thanks for that CVS Charity Classic reference, too. But I forgot how awesome that format is. That really needs to be reintroduced in the game of golf. I love that event. Let's end with some food questions here. We always end with food on the course of life. A couple quick ones for you. Going out, Hamden, Connecticut, not a ton of options, but there were obviously your local college bar and restaurant options right there on the main drag. What was your move? Were you an enchiladas guy, side street, Dick's? You know, what was your favorite play back in college?
So there was a place, not sure if it came after your time. It was called Droogie's. It was Mediterranean food. So pretty much every Sunday night, going back to like freshman year with my roommate, I was in Dana, so it was a double. So it was just me and my buddy Jake. We'd order like a chicken souvlaki wrap. We'd get a large fry and we'd get a milkshake. So that was always one of my go-tos in Droogie's. But you couldn't obviously go wrong with pizza in New Haven. I think there's many a spots, you know, first and foremost led by Pepe's. But pizza in New Haven was great. As far as like in Hamden itself, I was always a big Droogie's guy.
I think I was third floor, maybe like 305 or 6 in Dana. Where were you stationed for your first year at QU?
I was down on the first floor right by Hep Creek.
Amazing. And by the way, those were triples when I was at Quinnipiac in Dana.
Those were triples?
Oh, yeah. Man. How's that to blow your mind, huh?
Wow. Yeah, that was, I thought it was tight with two, let alone three. That's great though. But yeah, we were down first floor in Dana.
Good times. There's our Quinnipiac alum, Maury Hirsch-Gordon, joining us. Let's wrap with our 19th hole question. This is a good one for you. I think you're just getting used to the golf scene enough to know what it's like when you finish, say, a decent round on the course, you're with the boys, it's time for the 19th hole. What's your go-to order when you get in the clubhouse? What's your favorite meal and drink to order after a round of golf?
Oh, that's a great question. I do a chicken parm sub for sure. especially if I'm really hungry. We'll go with a side of fries and, you know, any type of local draft that they have. You know, I can go with a cocktail for sure, but I think in the summer months and the beauty of New England up here is, you know, are there IPAs, and there's so many top breweries, whether it be Cisco on Nantucket or, you know, a ton of spots. I'm a big Whalers guy down from being in Rhode Island for so long. And there's just a ton, even across Southern Massachusetts. I would do chicken parm sub, French fries, and a local ice cold draft, to cap my day.
Tried and true. Love it. Maury, thanks for hopping on the Course of Life. Really appreciate it, man. We'll be sure to connect next time I'm in Boston, or I'll see you out at TPC Boston for the LPGA event. But in the meantime, hit them straight when you're out there.
Anytime, Alex. Appreciate you having me on, and good luck.
Course of Life podcast is brought to you by Zencastr. We've been using Zencastr here since almost the very beginning, as how Alex and I record this podcast from hundreds of miles away. And it provides us with great quality audio that works every time. And it's something that makes Course of Life what it is and has kept us being able to make consistent episodes every week. And now it's super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. You feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. And have you ever wondered what you actually sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. Head on over to zencastr.com/pricing and use our promo code COURSEOFLIFE to get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences we do for all of your podcasting and content needs. Again, that's zencastr.com/pricing and our promo code COURSEOFLIFE. Zencastr, it's time to share your story. We're back. Great chat there with Maury. Love hearing other Quinnipiac Bobcats doing great in the world. And especially, as he said at the very beginning there, shouting proud the 2023 Division I Men's Ice Hockey National Champions, Quinnipiac Bobcats. I, you know, that's my go-to line whenever I say where I'm, you know, when I tell someone where I went to school. Oh, where'd you go to school? Oh, I went to Quinnipiac, you know, the Division I Men's Ice Hockey National Champions for 2023. Those guys. Yep.
I can tell you've rolled that off several times because it was clean delivery too. I know you always love a way to wedge that in. Yep. National Champions. Great to hear from Maury and connect with him. And again, follow on WHDH. You can download the app wherever you are and check out his reports, checking in on all things Boston sports. So really great chat there with Maury.
So we're going to transition from Maury, who's in Boston, cold winters, all that fun stuff. Yes, he was just in Marco, but still cold winters. We're going to transition to Hawaii, paradise.
Yes, like the total other side of the country.
Almost the other side of the world from Boston.
Quite literally, yeah. This is rookie Malia Nam, who also talks a little bit about her journey to the mainland for college and how she grew up playing the game in a very tight-knit community in Hawaii.
It's Hawaii. It can't get much better than that. But Kailua is a smaller town on the island of Oahu. And it's so beautiful. You know, you just grow up going to the beach pretty much every day. And I feel like growing up in a small town, you kind of appreciate the, you know, small town vibes, and people are all just really kind. So I'm really grateful to have kind of grown up in a very down to earth community.
Nice. Yeah, it looks like a very tropical setting, very peaceful setting to grow up in. I'm curious, what's the golf community like locally, and how did you first find the game?
Yeah, so for as small of an island, you know, Oahu is, I would say there's a pretty good community of golfers. I started golf at the age of 7. I happen to live on a golf course, Mid-Pacific Country Club. Okay. And we used to live in the middle of on the side of the middle of the fairway. So we'd get balls flying into the backyard every day.
I feel so bad. I play these courses all the time, and I'm part of that group of people that's sending balls into your yard. So I apologize on behalf of public golfers everywhere.
But that's basically how I kind of started to dip my fingers into the game of golf, was just because balls would be flying into the house. And I'm not sure why. My mom, she had a few golf clubs. She didn't play golf herself, but I always loved being outdoors as a kid. And so I would sneak onto the golf course after sunset and go play mini putt or chip around. And my mom, she started to notice that, I was actually pretty okay for a kid. And so she started to sign me up for group lessons at a course down the road. It's called Olomana Golf Course. And that's kind of actually where Michelle Wee started playing golf.
Very cool. Awesome. I imagine you obviously saw her story growing up, and you must have, in the back of your mind, wanted to mirror her path a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every young girl golfer from Hawaii, Michelle Wee is, was their idol growing up.
That's so awesome. Very cool to see. And yeah, that's a great way to fall into the game, is literally the golf balls arriving at your front door and you started practicing. So I imagine you got a pretty good short game if you just started kind of chipping and putting around the green near your house. Is that right?
I'm a hard critic on myself, but I have a decent short game. I actually think it's probably the most fun area of golf to practice. But such a small sample size, when you're actually playing.
Definitely. So I'm curious, progressing forward, and you obviously had some success in junior golf to get noticed to a certain extent, but what was it like for you to go ahead and choose USC, where you're going to actually play collegiately?
Yeah, so I didn't grow up playing a lot of AJGA events, unlike a lot of, junior golfers who lived on the mainland. So every summer I would just play the USGA events that I qualified for. But USC was, I didn't want to go anywhere too far from home. I growing up in warm weather, I always just thought, the West Coast is the farthest I'll go. And so USC was actually one of the first schools that had started to follow me during summer events. And it was just, it was always my dream school. And so I looked at other options of colleges, but I really appreciated that Justin Silverstein, who was the assistant coach at the time, he actively, watched me when I was starting at probably 14 years old. And it just felt right every time, we talked, and I'm glad it all worked out. Yeah, that's kind of just how it all started. He was the first coach to really watch me, and not just watch me based on results, because I wasn't a highly ranked junior golfer at the time, but
right.
He saw the potential that, other coaches may have not seen just because of my ranking.
That's important too. I feel like when you're picking a school, because you want to know that you're going to be with people and coaches that are there for you as coaches, and not just, there for you to see how low you can go every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a good reason to go for sure. Take everyone through a little bit of the college golf experience. What's the logistics of traveling to events, and break down what a season looks like for those who don't really know the college golf experience very well?
Golf is a unique sport in college. It is played all year round, both fall and spring seasons. So we're pretty much full steam the whole year. Typically, spring season is a little more jam-packed just because we do have championships in that semester or quarter. But basically, yeah, you get thrown into qualifying pretty much right when school starts. And qualifying is basically you compete against your teammates and to try to earn a spot in the lineup for tournaments. But we have practice every day. Justin, the head coach at USC, he liked morning practices. So we were leaving our apartments by 6 a.m., getting to practice at 6:45, and getting to leave around 11, 11:30, and then you go straight to class. So it was a lot on our schedules, but it kept us really focused, just because you had to be, your time management had to be on point, and making sure not only are you getting to golf and performing, but also showing up to class and trying not to fall asleep and making sure you get everything done on the academic side as well.
Yeah, it teaches you a lot for sure. And you grow up real fast. I'm curious, what was that, the early morning tea time in practice? Was that an adjustment for you, or are you okay with the early morning tea time?
It was definitely an adjustment. My freshman year, me and my roommate, who was also a freshman on the team, we slept in accidentally one day. And that was a quick learning reality check when we both slept in and almost missed qualifying. But yeah, I mean, by the time my final year at USC, I was just automatically waking up at 5:30, 5:15 every day. But granted, some days are hard, you know, especially I had classes that ended at 10 p.m. and didn't get home till 10:30. And then, you know, by the time you shower, everything, it was just, oh my gosh, here I go again.
And so for the actual logistics of the tournaments themselves, were you guys doing a lot of traveling by plane or by van, or was it a mix? How did that look for you guys?
We did majority by plane. Even when we would go up to Stanford to play, we flew by plane. So I can't really think of any, can't think of honestly very many events that we drove to.
What was it like, the plane experience? Were you a sleeper on the plane? Were you watching stuff nonstop? Was it games with the teammates? What was it like for you?
Yeah. I mean, when we got to the airport, I always look forward to, cause it's free food. So we would, all get breakfast, where we could all agree on before the flight. And then I slept usually, I like to sleep on the planes. I can fall asleep pretty much anywhere. So, but everyone on the plane kind of just did their own thing, pretty much just watch movies, sleep. But yeah, I would say most of us slept.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's exhausting being out there playing those tournaments and having that schedule, like you mentioned. Again, Malia Nam joining us here on The Course of Life. Get used to seeing her name on the LPGA Tour, USC alum, which we just talked about a little bit. You mentioned how there was kind of some qualifying aspects to playing at USC. So let's talk about a little bit about the Q Series on the LPGA. We featured a couple of players that have made it through the Q Series, but describe to people that grind and like how many total rounds you had to play to get through all the stages to get your card.
Yeah, so I started off at stage one and made it through Q series. So how many rounds is that? That's 14 rounds I had to play.
Jeez.
But I mean, obviously they were kind of broken up, but the final stage at Q series, 6 rounds, that was the most competitive rounds I've played in a row. But yeah, kind of bringing it back to qualifying at USC, I feel like that format that we did in college actually prepared me really well for getting prepared for these stages of qualifying. Just because, you know, I got super accustomed to it in college, having to play well under pressure. And that's kind of what Justin's whole model was about, is us playing under pressure and preparing us for that moment. So
definitely.
Yeah, going to Q school, I actually wasn't that nervous. A lot of people that I talked to, they were like, "Oh, are you nervous?" And I was like, "Honestly, not really." Like, I probably got a little nervous, I think, my final round at Q series.
It's one of those things where you're playing so many rounds. I feel like it's hard to waste that much energy being nervous for all 14 of those rounds. It's just quite, it feels and sounds like a marathon to an amateur golfer like me. Is that what it felt like to you?
Yeah, honestly, stage one and stage two are just 4 rounds. But stage three at that point, I was just like, we have so many rounds. One round is not going to, obviously I don't want to shoot bad, but I don't need to go out and shoot 66 every single day. No.
Love it. Tell everyone a little bit about, from what I read, it looks like you got some confidence in your driver specifically. What are your main thoughts leading up to swinging the Ping driver these days?
So I would say my best club is my driver. The Ping driver I've used for a couple of years now. I used to have TaylorMade, and I no hate to TaylorMade. I still love TaylorMade, but the Ping driver I feel is very, very consistent. And it sounds good. I look at my driver and I'm like, yeah, that looks good. So it gives me that little confidence. And it's just a club that it never really fails me. I feel like it really helps when your driver is always setting you up in the fairway. I do hit it a little bit farther than average. So there is that extra benefit of having shorter clubs into par fours, and even par fives. I'm a strong believer in if you think your club looks good, then you're going to hit it good.
Definitely. Yeah. And I was actually at the PGA show recently and got to take a couple of swings with the Ping driver, and I was pretty impressed with it. So cool to see that you're playing it out there on tour and looking forward to seeing more drives in the middle of the fairway for you. So I'm curious, you said you're quite a critic with your own game. What are you working on most in terms of practice session? Where are you allocating most of your time for your game in 2024?
I think the main thing I've been working with my coach is just consistency. And I play a little draw typically. One thing that me and my coach have been working on is just trying to straighten it out. And that's where I get a little picky at times, is because I'll hit a 3-yard draw and I'm telling my coach why to draw. So I'm like, I want to get it straight as possible. But yeah, the main thing, honestly, is just consistency and short game, and trying to, you know, those misses, you're going to, you know, even professional golfers miss all the time. So I'm trying to kind of make my dispersion a little bit tighter. But yeah, short game, I feel like everyone can work on short game all the time. So I've been just working a lot with different trajectories for pitches, using the bounce more, just opening up a bigger library of shots that I can use during tournaments.
Definitely. You will need the full library. The LPGA Tour is heading all over to some unique destinations. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to seeing you out there. Again, Malia.nam on Instagram if you want to follow along and check out her content on social there. Obviously, you know, you post a fair amount of good West Coast and Hawaii content. Seeing you do some snorkeling on Instagram, I got to ask, what was maybe your coolest underwater snorkeling find recently?
Ooh, I haven't gone snorkeling in a long time, but I would say in COVID, I was home in Hawaii and my friend has a boat. So we used to go diving and fishing all the time. But one day we went out and we were just, you know, kind of swimming around, and there was a Hawaiian monk seal that appeared behind under the reef, and it was super cool. I mean, just seeing it swim in open ocean. And honestly, I was a little freaked out because I haven't ever been that close in proximity to a Hawaiian monk seal.
Right. Yeah.
So it was so cool just to see it, just swimming around and not on a beach, you know, where it's kind of taped around, you know, when a beach is on a beach in Hawaii, they block it off and, they're very protective about the seal. So it was definitely that was my coolest experience ever, just seeing it swim freely. And I was a little scared because I was like, oh my gosh, what if it, you know, attacks me or something?
Nice. That's like a Nat Geo or Shark Week experience there. Very real life stuff.
Honestly, it felt like that. Yeah.
Very cool. Now, I know your answer to the best sunsets are for sure Hawaii sunsets. So I'm going to phrase the question differently. Tell me where like the second and the third best sunsets are after Hawaii being number one on that list.
Ooh. Oh, man, that's a tough question. Gosh, I mean, I'm not going to lie, California has some really good sunsets.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like I've seen some beautiful sunsets down at Hermosa Beach in SoCal when I was in college. So that would have to be my second choice.
Yeah, I would put in an honorable mention for maybe Arizona too. I've spent some time there and played some cool courses, right. And they have some nice sunsets too there.
Yeah, I forgot about Arizona. They have some beautiful sunsets too.
Very cool. Let's get to a couple food questions before we wrap. We always love ending with food content here on our show. So I saw at USC, you got to play a couple seasons with Gabby Ruffles, who we've had on the show a few months back, also out on tour with you. So I asked her a question that kind of stumped her a little bit surrounding her last name. It was whether she liked Ruffles or Lay's potato chips more. I'm curious, what's your answer? Are you team Ruffles or team Lay's?
I think I'm gonna have to say team Lay's.
Yeah, Gabby was about to say team Lay's too, but then she stuck by the family name, so she had to go with Ruffles in the end. And then we always end up with our 19th hole question, Malia, so it's real simple. Mm-hmm. You get into your favorite clubhouse, your favorite golf course after a good round. What's your 19th hole order, your favorite meal and drink to get after a round of golf?
I won't lie, I like to treat myself to a good steak if I either a good round or a good tournament. A nice ribeye steak for me, and then a lemon drop martini to go with it.
Okay, nice. Yeah. I like that combo. That is living right there. I appreciate
or an espresso martini.
Nice. Very classy. Very classy answers from Malia and on there. Malia, best of luck with the rookie season. Looking forward to following and seeing more golf from you out on the LPGA Tour.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me.
We're back. Great chat there with Malia. That wraps up a great month, Alex, of you chatting with different LPGA rising stars in the game.
Legends like Sherry Steinhauer as well.
That's right. All over. And the content that we're going to cover for the LPGA Tour in 2024 just gets better from here.
I think so. Yeah, I've definitely got the Chevron Championship locally in the Houston area. I remember we had Gerling Coron, who's from the area, at Carlton Woods, where I did some interviews last year. So we'll be sure to check that out. And then remember the FM Global sponsored event that is coming to TPC Boston. I know you missed that Deutsche Bank Championship event there on the PGA Tour. Well, the LPGA Tour filling that spot Labor Day week. So that's definitely on my itinerary when I'm back visiting family, and maybe even a little Solheim Cup trip in September. That's all TBD, but excited to cover more of the LPGA in 2024.
And if you're looking forward to hearing everything we do with the LPGA, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, make sure you punch that subscribe button on the podcast app you're listening to us right now. If you're listening to us on YouTube, which you can do as well, the podcasts are posted there. Make sure you hit that subscribe button as well, so you never miss anything we do there. We're on Instagram, COL Podcast, Course of Life Alex, and MWRINC. Alex is on X, formerly known as Twitter, yes, Course of Life 1. All the places. We'll talk food in a little bit. You can follow our Instagram food account, Always End With Food, and check out all that stuff there as well. Before we talk food, though, we have to talk basketball.
A couple big basketball stories this week.
Let's start with the biggest one, I think, and that is Caitlin Clark becoming the all-time leading scorer in NCAA basketball, surpassing that 50-year-old mark set all those years ago. So what do we think? Caitlin Clark, she's going to be overall number one pick in the WNBA draft because she announced she's going to the WNBA. She's going to go. She's a star for sure.
Oh, superstar. And it's one of those things where, you know, that I have a connection to women's college basketball, having worked for the Quinnipiac team when I was there, and definitely love watching the game and appreciate its greatness. But this Caitlin Clark superstar to Mike, this is different than anything else that women's college basketball has ever had in its existence. I know there's been great runs with UConn versus Tennessee, and I understand what Gino Auriemma has done there, and I understand South Carolina's dominance in recent years, but the individual and just the like tune-in ability that she's had, Mike, Caitlin Clark is on national television on Sunday afternoons. Caitlin Clark is being talked about on Boston sports talk radio when they will spend hours, if not days, straight talking about a Patriots player or a Red Sox headline. Women's college basketball is making it into the broadcast of the Today Show in the first 20 minutes, you know, getting it in spots. It hasn't been in years, if not decades, if not ever. So it's been really just cool to see the ride, and her game is just electric to make it all even more awesome.
And of course, the you know, sports talk is money talk, really. And the amount of money that they're charging for tickets to see Caitlin Clark in Iowa play in these games has skyrocketed. I think back when Clark became the highest women scorer, I was hearing people poaching tickets off of students buying these tickets for $5, $10 and then turning around and selling them for $250 a ticket.
That's insane for a women's college game to be selling out a large Big 12 venue like that regularly, night in and night out. And she's going to go on to do amazing things in the WNBA. The endorsements are going to be through the roof for her, and the legend only grows. Obviously, the elephant in the room right now, the last thing is, can she march that Hawkeyes team all the way through the back bracket and win the championship? She came so close last year, but get all the way over the top and win the national championship. That truly would be the icing, the cherry on top for sure.
It would be. We'll be paying attention. We'll be rooting for her.
Yeah, definitely.
Why not? On the professional side in the NBA, LeBron James, already the NBA's leading scorer, crossed the 40,000 point threshold.
Jeez. That's a nuts number.
I feel like we need asterisks next to LeBron. No offense, LeBron, but I mean, you've been playing since you've been 18. You didn't play in college.
Right, yes.
So you got four extra years. How old is LeBron? 36?
39 or 40 now? 39 or 40. My time's flying.
He's nearing the end of his career, probably, right?
Yes.
Is he? Maybe not. We don't know.
But the word on the street is, Mike, waiting a year or two to play with his son on whatever team that may be. So maybe another year or two in him? I don't know.
We'll see. But 40,000 points.
That's a bananas number. And you know, I'm like King LeBron hater from my Celtics rivalry days. And I'll do it at any corner I can. But that's one stat that just like absolutely goes without any hatred at all. That's an unbelievable number to accrue.
I'm going to be that guy and I'm going to rain on LeBron's parade for a second.
Okay, do it.
LeBron or Kobe?
Oh, well, if the title's on the line, I think the answer's Kobe.
Yeah, Kobe.
If you want a guy to put up the stats for you throughout the entire game, LeBron.
Yeah.
But if the title's on the line and we're talking one shot, I'm going with Kobe.
Okay. Here's another question. Here's maybe a harder one. LeBron or Russell?
Oh wow. I mean, geez. You're killing me with the Celtics pride there. I can't not say Bill Russell. Sorry. Yeah, too much allegiance there.
Yeah. There you go. All right, let's hashtag always in with food.
Yep, food segment to wrap every Course of Life podcast. It's our 19th whole content coming at you now. And I'll lead the way here, Mike. I was in Marco Island, Florida, like you mentioned, and went to the Marco Island, Florida Farmers Market. Now, I admittedly had pretty low expectations for what this would be like. It's a small, you know, tourist population island, very seasonal, but it was massive. I would say dozens, if not maybe over 100 to 150 different vendors, all sorts of things, fruit, fresh fruit, navel oranges from Florida, Mike, doesn't get any fresher than that. But the highlight was the dessert pastry I picked up, which I knew you would appreciate. It was referred to in title, and I'll let you ask a question to follow up, as a cannoli cruffin. What are your thoughts on that dessert title right there?
That's an interesting combination. A cannoli. So it was a cruffin filled with a cannoli filling is what I'm guessing, actually, right?
Essentially, it was a muffin shaped croissant pastry with cannoli filling and topping as well.
Well, I mean, cruffins are all the rage now.
Sure.
They're huge. Cannoli filling in a cruffin. I mean, what could be bad? It'd be great.
It was absolutely amazing and worth every penny. So some sleeper surprises on vacation at the farmer's market for me this past week.
It's incredible. I need to talk about something that I saw that just made me stop in my tracks.
Yeah, and you want to talk booze, which is something you love talking about all the time,
I want to talk about something that White Claw just came out with.
Mm.
This is the new White Claw 0% alcohol premium seltzer.
Right.
So and the,
plus one and minus one, basically.
I'm like so confused by this in so many ways. and it's like you guys know that you're just making like LaCroix now.
I wonder you might have to do the head to head just because I'm curious what the taste and ingredient comparison really is and what White Claw is putting in there. Non-alcoholic alcoholic seltzer versus just a good old-fashioned seltzer. I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's they say they've also like added electrolytes in there too. So actually, we're getting into like Gatorade territory, I guess, really as well here. it's just so. So I need to read the copy here on their website. It's created with ultra-refined seltzer. White Claw 0% alcohol not only combines iconic White Claw flavors with elevated new secondary beverage alcohol drink notes, but uniquely adds hydrating electrolytes, half as many as you'd find in a leading sports drink. I'm like so confused. Is this like, I'm just confused.
So you can pull up to the first tee or your next workout with a White Claw seltzer and just to, you know, boost your electrolytes, get you going for the day.
I guess so.
That's
or I can just get
now.
A Gatorade and a LaCroix and probably spend less money, maybe.
Fascinating. White Claw non-alcoholic seltzer. Interesting. If anyone's out there and gives it a try, hit us up. Hit me up on Twitter, CourseLife1, or hit us up on Instagram at COL Podcast and let us know your thoughts. That's Always End With Food, another great wrap on the Course of Life podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe now if you have not yet already, and we'll see you next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.